Dummies. Be a buddy. A WBAI buddy.
It's the season for the 11th annual Pacifica Radio Archives Campus Campaign broadcast on the Pacifica Airwaves Tuesday and Wednesday, November 13th and 14th.
This is Yo-Yo Ma, a supporter of the Pacifica Radio Archives Campus Campaign National Education Project broadcast.
Join us for year 4 of our campus campaign, where you get the chance to help us take our history out of the vault and into the classroom.
There isn't anything quite like this anyplace.
You donate and get a jump drive with hundreds of hours of history on it. This year, 360 hours for all 4 campus campaign volumes. And we send a copy of your selected historic recordings to a school, college, teacher, or just another friend. You get to decide. The campus campaign coming soon. For more information, go to supportpra.org. Listen to History Come Alive on November 13th and 14th on all 5 Pacifica stations.
This is Armand DeMille back with you with The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. We're presenting this program to you today from another location, a different location, so you may be hearing some street sounds in the background, but it's very appropriate to hear New York City street sounds, especially today. Because it means that the city is alive, just as all of us are alive, having come through, for many of you, some tremendous efforts. But I want to talk today, we're going to talk a lot about the hurricane, and we're going to talk about losses and tragedy and resilience and all that. But I want to talk to you about something else today. I thought we'd just bring in another thought for you, something for you to understand about losing your mind. Why, when you were watching people go through different things, did you see such rage and so many people at such deep emotional conditions? Why do people lose their minds? What is that about? So I want to talk to you about insanity today. Not insanity like psychosis, like a diagnosis, like the kind of thing that you'd be reading in the DSM. Not something that you give somebody medication for. But just not being in your right mind and what the advantage is about that. See, there's a beauty in insanity. Now, a lot of you are going to say, hey, what kind of beauty is there? Because I've suffered from insane parents most of my life, and I've had to deal with that in insane partners. But I want to take you on the inside of an insane brain, of a brain that is not, what does it mean, insane? Now, the very word means, when we use that word, we originally meant it to mean psychosis, which meant a guy named Psy, whose last name was psychosis, meant somebody who did not see reality. Now, what's reality? If we were to look at that and we were to think about that, we would say, well, reality is what really is. But you see, we all have different eyes, and we all see things differently. Is there any reality? Is there a consensual reality? So a group of people get together and say, we will be the consensus. This is what reality is to us. The numbers 1 through 10 are sequential, and 1 is followed by 2, by followed by 3. And if you say there is no 3, but it's just 1, 2, 4, then you're crazy, because you don't have our reality. All right. So let's go with the fact that reality itself is consensual. When a whole group of people agree that's the way normal is, and you're part of that group, if you decide to step out of that group, you are abnormal, not normal. And by some people's definition, you would be insane. Well, what does that mean? being insane? What does it mean to be that? What is it like? Why are so many people so unique, so different? Why do people choose to wear clothing that are completely outrageous, behave in ways that are completely outrageous? Why? Why do people choose that? See, there's a beauty in insanity. Because you could step out of reality, which is pretty tough if you think about it. I mean, just what you got to go through from birth to death, that's one long, hard struggle. Has a lot of joys along the way. Hopefully you get enough tickles, enough pleasures along the way to say, oh, this makes it worthwhile. But everybody dies. You go from birth to death. At the end of it all, it was a struggle. It was a battle. Well, if not a battle, it was a strain, a stress. It would have been so nice if you were born a prince or a princess and everything was just handed to you and it was beautiful, you know. But, so most people who find the stress of life try to step out of it. And they find many different ways of stepping out of it. And stepping out of reality is a struggle. But people who step out of reality can also be our most creative, our most wanting. I mean, they give us things, Van Gogh, or Van Gogh, as he would say in certain settings, was completely, you know, he stepped out of reality. But perhaps the most common form of stepping out of reality, and the most amazing form given to us by nature, too, sex and love. And they're both very often the same thing. But let's talk about that for a little bit. How is sex and love removing yourself from reality? Let's talk to you about sexual drive. Sexual drive itself, the need to copulate, to have sex, to have an orgasm, to release, or to combine bodily parts, all of that is driven by instincts. Instincts, which are meant to say to you, this is what you're meant to do, and we don't care whatever you think. We just mean you to do this because we want you, we nature want you to do this because we want you to make babies. And we want you to keep this thing going. So sex drive itself is questionable as to whether you're ever in your right mind when you're driven by sex and whether you should be in your right mind or not. He drove me out of my mind during sex. She was out of my mind. I mean, this whole idea of abandoning your head. One woman who I know described to me, she said, during sex, I completely lose myself. And that's the ideal, that the ideal in sex was to abandon yourself, to lose yourself. It's a funny thing. You know, it's funny how frequently you will see that men report, they look at the person who is their lover. If it's a male-female relationship, the man looks at the lover as she is losing herself. She doesn't stare at him as much. She's supposedly getting lost. It's almost like his job in life is to take her out of her mind. Fascinating thought, isn't it? And we're talking about sex and we're talking about insanity. Now, I know you may not think that this relates to the past week and what's going on here in New York, but it does. It does. I'm just trying to change the subject a little bit for you. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. So, sex drive itself, for some people, sex is only about orgasm. It's only about being able to have that release. And there are some people I know who are, you know, maybe all they care about is multiple orgasm, and that all mating is about. All having a boyfriend is about, or having a girlfriend is about, is to be able to leave your mind. What's the matter with your mind? Why? Why can't it just be there all the time? Well, it's the idea. Now, in your young years, you want to do that more and more. A little later on, you look at it and you say, okay, I've done a lot of that. Now, what's left behind? Now, that's the insanity, or if you call it insanity, the abandonment of your consciousness that comes with sex. What about romance? It's not very different. It's not very far from that. Because romance is wonderful. It's beautiful. Just like sex is wonderful. It's beautiful. It's a fabulous experience. I mean, you could just put it among the top five things in life. You know, maybe giving birth, maybe winning the lottery, whatever the top five things in life are, a great romance is a wonderful thing while it's taking place, for as long as it lasts. Finding a love partner who you trust and you feel secure, fabulous thing. Now, this is not always loss of sanity. This is not always stepping out of your mind. Because sometimes it starts with stepping out of your mind and it develops into a relationship that becomes really beautiful, exquisite over a long period of time. Most do not. With a 50% divorce rate, and then out of the 50% that remain, about another half of those are unhappy in their relationship. So we don't have a very good track record for being able to pick and keep a romance going. However, romance is a wonderful leaving of reality. And I'm making a case for why people like to do this. Because it's tough the other way. It's tough seeing reality. It's difficult to see everything as it is. Imagine if you could see through all of the games, all of the shams, all of the tricks, and you looked at everybody you looked at, you saw honestly. You saw their real self. Imagine what that's like. Well, I know a lot about what that's like. I meet people, I see them, they behave in a certain way. It's like if you're a physician, and you see somebody walking towards you limping, and they could be making believe they're having a very good time, but you know there's something about that limp. Or if you see them having a skin disorder, you see the skin disorder, and you may not talk about it, but you know there's something going on with them. Or you might even say that person's got a thyroid problem as a physician. Well, as a psychologist also, you always run into that a great deal, but most people who are therapists have too many of their own needs to be able to perceive what's going on with another human that gets past their own needs because they're the same needs as everyone else. But being able to see people in reality is a very difficult thing. But we are trained to do it. When you see your children growing up and you see them getting bent out of shape and they lose their minds over things like a lost toy, an unavailable toy, or what happened with Johnny in the schoolyard. You know, you see your child doing it and you get this feeling that it's okay. It's okay. I understand that for my child this is a very important thing, but it's not real. It's not about reality. So what other things do we do to lose our What are the things that we do to lose our mind? That's on my desk. Anger, rage, violence. That's another way of stepping out of your mind. I was looking at, I think it was Bloomberg being interviewed down in the Rockaways. And there were people who were virtually threatening to hurt him. They were screaming at him, what are you going to do? What are you doing for us? So on and so forth. And they wanted to hurt the man. Or they were yelling with such violence. Not to say anything necessarily good about him, but he stood there and he did not take it and cower from it, nor did he have to go up with it and challenge it. He understood it. He understood that rage, anger, comes out of some sense of powerlessness that happens to people when their reality is so uncomfortable, so unhappy. So we have different things that we do. Love, sex, rage, all of the extreme emotions are ways that we step out of our reality. And in fact, one may say that emotions themselves are a gift for not seeing reality. It's just one of the ways that we're endowed so that we don't have to deal with what really is. I mean, the Buddhists say life is suffering. Is that true? I don't think so, because I think there's a great joy in life, one way or another, even living in reality. But let's look at the ultimate step out of reality that humans use, and that's drugs. Drugs, medications, chemistry, everything you do. And I'll start with severe drugs like heroin. You know, if you take heroin, and heroin is an amazing, amazing drug. That's why it's so popular in the market. That's why it's so popular among addicts. It's amazing when you, heroin takes you to a place that nothing else could ever take you to. And then once you go there, unfortunately, what follows from this heaven is a hell itself. But it's an amazing thing. Just as very often, if you take ecstasy for the first time or any of the other popular drugs, ketamine, any of those, they take you to a place that is out of your mind, which is what you're looking for. Smoking grass, smoking marijuana. You smoke marijuana. Why is it called medical marijuana? Because it takes you out of the reality of your physical ailment. Alcohol. Alcohol is one of the most common ways. I mean, when you go to a bar and you go stand at a bar where people go after work and they want to have a few drinks, what are they doing? I'm here to leave reality. Bartender, serve me up an ounce of non-reality. 2 ounces, I can't get there yet. 3 ounces, all right, I'm almost there. On my fourth double, I feel it. I feel the buzz, and they talk about it as a buzz. And I want you to understand, people do this because people need to do this. Because truth, reality, sanity, very, very difficult. Very difficult, and I have great love for it all. See, I believe that if you see the truth and if you deal with reality, you have a much more positive attitude in the long run. But in the short run, you don't. In the short run, you see much too many things that are, you know, uncomfortable, not nice to see. However, you don't have to go around sharing that negativity and being part of that negative world. So let's look at one other thing we do. How about lying? Lying is another way of changing reality. And people tell untruths. They tell stories. They tell things that aren't true so as to escape a situation that may be threatening or not as pleasing to them. So if somebody believes that if they told you what really was, you would leave them or not continue with them, that you would abandon them in some way, if somebody really believes that, they'll lie to you. They could lie to you by not giving you all the information, or they could lie to you by giving you the wrong information. What is that saying? It's saying that they believe that they do not welcome reality, nor do you. And of course, when you discover this, and then the reality kicks in, and you say, oh my Lord, I have been lied to all this time, the next step out of reality is you get to anger and rage. Rather than saying, I see the truth, I need to welcome this, I need to be a part of this. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. I'm trying to show you things about people and about stress and stress reactions that people have, and specifically about this stepping out of your mind when it's so necessary. So that's the gist of it, my friends. I want you to understand it. I want you to understand with a great compassion. So sometimes when we have stepped too far away from ourselves, something happens, and something could happen in nature that brings you and forces you back to to finding who you really are or what you really are or what your community is and what your relationships are. It strips away a lot of the illusory stuff. Where are you without the lights? In fact, it's kind of interesting because sometimes it offers you such an opportunity to see things in a new way, a brand new way. You learn so much. Many of us have lived through a lot of the different things that have happened in New York City. Since this is a local radio station in many ways, and to many of you who are visitors to New York, you all know about New York, Greenwich Village. You've been here probably in your own 20s and so on and so forth. So what's the experience? For many people, Sandy was a horror. I mean, it is a horror. It's a terrible thing, ripping lives apart. But how does it change your thinking? How does it change your vision? How does it? What does it bring that might be different? I have with me in the studio Julian. Julian was, he's a young man who goes to college at NYU, and he had an experience walking through that would be unlike anything any of us would have had, because he's 20 years old. So let me introduce you to Julian and let you see a different world open by his description. And then let's see what that teaches us about what we might do for ourselves.
Hi, I'm Julian. I'm 20 years old. I'm an NYU student, and I live in the East Village. And I've been living through Hurricane Sandy for the past week in the East Village in Lower Manhattan. And I live right next to St. Mark's Place, which is a street that's very popular normally in the East Village. And it's just full of tattoo parlors, bars, all that. And it was pitch black for the past 6 days. And it was just something totally different than it's ever been. And walking down there at night with people, flashlights and lamps and just looking over your shoulder constantly, and it happening to be Halloween was just a very humbling experience. It was different because it was sort of like a film noir film, because there was cars that would just drive by and the headlights were all that was lighting the streets, and the 7-Eleven was pitch black, and you went in there and you just found what you wanted and you talked to the guy with the flashlight in the front and headed home, and pizza places had candlelit, and that was the only thing running because they had gas-powered ovens. And it was just, it was remarkable, and I was kind of upset that the power came back on in a little bit. I mean, obviously I loved the fact that we had heating and hot water again, but there was something about it that was really interesting, and I noticed it when we went to the pizza place to get food with my friends, and we had no cell service, we had no cell phones because they were dead, we had no electricity, and we just kind of sat there and we ate our pizza and we just talked, and I wasn't distracted by anything. There was no cars, there was no cell phones, no text messages, no Facebook, just the people we bought pizza from and each other.
And it was, So there's a brand new experience that comes out of something that Julian would have never, ever seen. And many of us have never seen. We don't know how well we function under different conditions. Stressors bring trauma, bring a lot of horror and terrible things with it. We know that. What else do we get from it? What else did we learn? What did you learn about yourself? What did you learn about your own ability to survive? How formidable are you? I have seen people throughout the last week respond to this with total powerlessness, but almost every person eventually winds up coming up from their bottoms and saying, but I can get through this. Supporting themselves. And then they go through the selfish phase where I just got to grab for me. I got to take care of myself. I got to do my own. And then at another point, they realize that they are part of a group, a tribe, and that you really can't do this alone. I heard from many people about looters. about people who were coming by to steal things from their houses while they were going through trying to protect whatever they had left. One man said to me, let them have it. He said, I decided to let them have whatever they wanted in my house. He said, I put a claim into the insurance. He said, it was just amazing trying to hold on to everything. And there were things I was trying to hold on to, things that actually had gotten lost in the flood, like a photograph that I thought was so tremendously important. But the memories, he told me, were not as important. What was important is how much I could hold my heart together and be a decent human being. Those are the words he said to me. So let me go back to Julian for just a minute, and let me ask Julian this question. So here you are now, 20 years old, and you realize cell phones, text messages, iMacs, iPad, everything. You live your life by that. And now all of a sudden, none of it is there. And I know that you're going to say it was so freeing and it was so wonderful on so many levels. How did the people around you respond to it?
Any chance I got to check anything, which was maybe once, what is the question? Like the people that were outside of the blackout? Or... My friends, a lot of people were freaking out and constantly trying to find signal. It was turned into a sort of infinite, let's run around and find signal somewhere, because you could find maybe one signal four blocks away from my house or something like this. And people either freaked out or threw their phones on the floor and said, I don't care, and I'm not going to charge my phone, and I'm going to have 5 days without it.
Did people actually do that? Did people actually... say, I'm not going to do it? Because it's amazing. It's like the gas lines for the adults, right? The grown-ups are out there trying to find gas lines, and we're going to get gas, and I have to have gas. And then there are the other people going to power supply stores. I have to find power, because not because they want to be in touch with their families only, but just because they don't want to be powerless. And it was like they were powerless during that time.
Yeah.
So what you're saying is, Julian, some people, you and some of the other people said, you know, there's something about these attachments that are not as good as we think it is.
Yeah, I was telling my friend, actually, this girl I spent most of the break with, and we were just in candlelight, we're in my bedroom, and we're just talking, because we would talk for like 6 hours, because that was what we did the whole time, and... we were talking about how this idea of the world sort of pausing for us for a week. And obviously, you know, time, whatever, it's a concept, pausing time would be ridiculous. But it was a sort of moment where everybody, our job, school was canceled, jobs were canceled, transportation stopped. We didn't have any plans. And it was just a sort of moment of pausing, and we were just there, and we didn't really know what to do other than eat and talk, and it was strange. But I definitely, there was a point where I just didn't think about my phone at all, or I didn't even worry about what was going on the internet or the news or anything. It was just sort of, we would light some candles and drink a glass of wine or something and just spend time with each other.
Well, I guess back in my day, we did that with LSD. So here comes the storm. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We're talking about how different things will affect your mind in such a way. There is tragedy, of course. There's the way tragedy affects you, and there's how do you recover from pain, and how do you recover from lost things. We all know, and everybody knows the answer to it. Everybody knows that what you've got to do is let it go, give it up, start all over again, stiff up. Everybody knows those answers, so I'm not giving you any of that today. What I am saying, and of course everybody else is going to talk to you about opportunities, but there is change. You know, a weather storm, a typhoon, a hurricane is a climactic event of the earth which is meant to correct an imbalance. Mind you, so when there's a when there's a typhoon, or when there's a hurricane, or when there's a cyclone, you're saying there's an imbalance in the positive and negative ions of the earth and the atmosphere, and nature decides to correct itself. Nature was deciding to correct something. Maybe it was correcting the way we abuse our atmosphere. Maybe it's trying to do something about the green gases. Nature was attempting to humble man and say to man, we are a cost. Here we are. We're trying to find a balance. And, of course, tremendous loss in people's lives and all that. And I just don't want to have to keep going into that, because I want to say that there is something here that is very valuable for us. When we get past our personal tragedies, there is something here that is enormous, something to listen to. That's more than just, you know, the hand of God or sweeping away the ills of green gases. It's something bigger than that. It's something reminding us that we are resilient. We're going to take a short break, and when we get back, a little music for you and relevant stuff.
I'm just a little bit caught in the middle. Life is a maze, love is a riddle. I don't know where to go, can't do it alone. I've tried, and I don't know why. Slow it down, make it stop, or else my heart is going to pop, 'cause it's too much.
That's the show by Lenka. It's quite a remarkable recording, which talks a lot about it. It talks a lot about the way you could feel lost in the middle of all of this. Listen, this is Armand DeMille back with you with The Positive Mind. We're talking about learning to bounce back. We're talking about the way it is when you deal with psychological and physiological challenges. Andrew Zolli in the New York Times wrote an article about resiliency. And in his resiliency, he said the following. For decades, people who concern themselves with the world's wicked problems, interconnected issues like environmental degradation, poverty, food security, and climate change, have marched together under the banner of sustainability. The idea that with the right mix of incentives, technology substitutions, and social change, humanity might finally achieve a lasting equilibrium with our planet and with another. Now, this is quite an interesting idea of sustainability. The idea that even though we're a growing planet, even though we have growing needs, we can sustain ourselves. But there seems to be a new idea that's growing now, which is called resilience. Resilience simply means it's an individual's tendency to thrive with adversity. You come back stronger. The current regime is being challenged. Inside, people are starting to ask themselves, how are we going to get better by what we go through? Challenges such as this storm bring this question really to the fore. And a lot of question about how we could develop resiliency in people. Because we want more than just a person to survive and come back to where they were. Isn't it true that for every problem you've ever had in your life, you've grown from it in some way? Or could have grown from it in some way according to how you handled it? Is it that you should avoid every pain, anything that ever caused you pain? If it caused you difficulty, if loving was too difficult, you give up loving? If trying to find a partner was too difficult, if it's trying to find a family or friends has created pain in some way, do you give it up completely? No, you don't. You learn. And you do better in your choosing. You do better in your picking. That's resiliency. Resiliency is when you learn from your past experiences, not just from mistakes. So in this particular case, of course, we're looking at this disaster, and here we have a disaster, and what is it? What is it offering us to us? What is it saying to us? For a good period of time in the lowlands of New York, we built, after 9/11, we built these green-friendly properties that were meant to resist any further attacks or anything else that could happen down 9/11. But we weren't ready for the big attack by nature itself. We never expected this to happen, and it brings one more challenge to us. The most developed part of Manhattan was the part that was the most attacked by the hurricane. The lower part of Manhattan was the part that was the most flooded. What do we learn from that? What are we going to get from that? Recently, there's been evidence that indicates a capacity to resist a sharp decline in functioning after trauma. In fact, quite the opposite. Maybe there were too many houses built within a certain area of space. Maybe people were forcing themselves out of their boundaries. Maybe this whole concept of everybody should own a home, which when I was a kid, you know, that was like a dream that almost nobody ever realized. And then it became a necessity. Then it became an urgency, and then people put themselves into hock. Now we have insurance companies that are going to go bankrupt. And then we're going to blame them for what goes on. And we have a government that's going to have to come up with all the money to pay for everything, especially with our excesses. Do our excesses create these tragedies? Yes. Yes. In many ways, we do. If you think about some of nature's forest fires, you know, it's the excess. It's the excess that creates this nature's need to correct itself. not to take away anything from the trauma of it. I mean, you know, please, I'm trying to go a step beyond that. Okay, so resilience is an individual's ability to generate biological, psychological, and social factors to not only resist, but to adapt and strengthen itself when faced with an environment of risk. And it generates individual social and moral success. Here's some of the things we need. A number of factors that promote resilience. The ability to cope with stress effectively and in a healthy manner. How do you deal with stress? How do you see it? Do you crack under stress? Of course you don't. In fact, if you're within the listening radius of WBAI, you're somebody who knows stress really well. And you don't crack. You may not thrive under stress, but you get through. You get through much more than most people do. Do you have good problem-solving skills? Most probably you do. There are very few people who could survive, especially in this tri-state area, without good problem-solving skills. And your problem-solving skills may be to not be able to solve a problem. You just may escape all the problems all the time. But one of the other important things that have been identified in resiliency is the ability to seek help. Now, for many people, they were isolated, and they couldn't go for help. They couldn't find help. Now, I have no criticism of the people who decided not to leave their homes, because I've been through enough storms in my life and warnings that even when this one came around, I said, I wonder if it's going to be true or not. So I can understand why people don't want to abandon their properties last time around. Next time around, I can see why. You know, I can see, okay, it's different now. But were you able to seek help? Can you seek help? Have you built your network so that you're able to seek help? Do you hold the belief there is something one can do to manage your feelings and cope? Now, this is a big one. One day, I had a number of stressors on my back, and things were coming from all directions. There were problems with people, problems with family, and there were a number of things. I was just beside myself. I just couldn't believe all was coming in my direction at once. And I felt fatigued. I just felt I had a cold. I remember it well. And a good friend of mine walked up and said, you could take more than this, Armand. You could take a lot more than this. And I smiled because it was absolutely true. We've been through a lot worse. And we can handle more. Do you have the belief that you can handle more stress than you're living with now? Or do you believe you can't take another inch? You can't take another bit of it? If you have that belief that you can't take another bit, it's not true. Nature will show you, it'll shut out your lights. It'll show you how you're going to do without lights, without heat. It'll show you how you'll do without your communication tools. Yes, we will find a way to test you and show you that you're even more resilient than you thought. Do you feel connected to other people, family and friends? Do you feel connected? If not, it's going to be more difficult, but you can. You can be resilient without that connection. You don't have to have it, but it's an important part. Now, another one is being able to talk to people about the stress that you feel. If you feel stressors, some people are able to talk about it and other people can't. When you keep it private, when pride or something else holds you back, it affects your resiliency. There used to be a perception. There's a perception that either you're going to be powerful or powerless. And those are the only two choices that a person has. That either you're going to present yourself as powerful or you're going to present yourself as weak. Angie's uncle, a man from the Dominican Republic, said it so beautifully. He said to his niece, she told me this story when I was talking about this once, and she said to me, She said, my uncle said to me, once I had money, now I don't. But he didn't say it with shame. He talked about it at two different existing conditions. Once I had it, now I don't. Once I was strong, now I'm not. Once I was healthy, now I'm not. Once I was sick, and now I'm not. As opposed to it being on a continuum, which a lot of people believe that once you have something and you lose it, you're going to lose it forever, or that you won't be able to survive. Maybe you've been fortunate in your life. Maybe you've been lucky in your life to be able to have some good fortune. Maybe you once had a wonderful marriage and wonderful family and a lot of things. Great, great. And maybe you don't have it now. That's all right. Once you had a husband, now you don't, for whatever reason. Once you had children in your house, now they're all grown up. All of these are things that people use as a way of kind of challenging their own resilience. You have to believe that there are two different conditions. The one that was is not necessarily the one that is now, and the one that is now is just another form of being. Another is having another factor in being able to survive is having an identity. To say to yourself, I'm a survivor, as opposed to a victim. See, the victim doesn't have the power. Survivor does have the power. Strangely enough, of course, it seems so simple, but one of the most important factors in maintaining your own resiliency and fostering your own resiliency is the ability to help others. When you get outside of yourself, when you're so cold and you're wearing a jacket and a coat and you see somebody else freezing and you give them your coat so that it's only you with a jacket and them with a coat, just so that you could have, they could have some warmth. When you see yourself going outside of yourself, it empowers you. It really does. And lastly, look for the positive meaning in the trauma. Look for it. Dig down, my friends. Dig down, my friends, all of you. And I know so many of you are going to resent my even saying it. How could you find it? Find it. Find the positive meaning in this trauma. Find what it meant. I knew a group of people who built homes in a luxury area where they built it with stolen money. It was all illegal money. And they all got together and they built this property with illegal money. And they had their own personal, they were in a hurricane and it was all wiped away. And they kind of looked at it and they felt free for the first time. Because it was a symbol to their dishonesty. The emerging field in the study of resilience also has neurological basis that they've been looking at. There's a neuropeptide, Y, which is called NPY, and 5-DHEA are thought to limit the stress response. And so they're looking for that potentially having those chemicals. In addition, the relationship between social support and stress resilience is thought to be mediated by the abilities, the body's hypothalamic, pituitary adrenal axis, which includes oxytocin and your ability to bond with others. So the American Psychological Association suggests 10 ways to build resilience. Number one, maintain good relationships with close family members and friends. Avoid seeing crisis or stressful events as unbearable problems. Accept circumstances that cannot be changed. Develop small, realistic goals, not huge goals. I'm not going to rebuild my house. I'm not going to get that couch back to what it was. I'll maybe settle for something a little less. Find some freedom in what you have to let go. Take a decisive action in adverse situations. Be decisive as opposed to undecided. Now, that's very easy to say, because a lot of people don't know what to do and they are undecided. So my suggestion to you is that if you can't make the decisions, throw yourself to somebody who you know does make decisions and say, make the decisions for me, and then follow them. Under stress, this could be very important. Look for an opportunity to find something out about yourself after you struggle with a loss. Divorce does this frequently with people. You break up with somebody, you lose a relationship. There are years. It takes years to get over after a long relationship with somebody. Divorce is an enormous way of learning about yourself because you so often get lost in the relationship. And when you're lost in the relationship, you never see yourself. After the divorce, you get a chance to see who you are, what you are. To keep a long-term perspective and consider a stressful event in a broader context, I would add to this, be careful about one thing. Be careful about extending yourself. Extending yourself with loans and money that you owe and borrowings and having too many things that you have to pay for, that'll very often be the difference between the people who survive and don't. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We have been looking, or we have looked at a week of tremendous difficulty. But I find that the people I know and the people I know the best will be the people who will come through this with a much stronger way of being. Now the question becomes, how do we help people become more resilient? What do you do? What is it what you do? Well, you all know if you've got someone who's got a physical challenge, not to do too much for them because they eventually give up doing everything for themselves. So if someone has a challenge and they can't walk a few steps, you don't walk the steps for them. If they ask you, you may do it. But if they don't ask you, allow them to take care of things themselves. Don't jump and take care of everything for them because they lose their muscle tone. They don't have the ability to do it. Well, the same is with children. Don't take care of children by nurturing them and making life too easy. You make life easy. What's going to happen to them when they get out of the forest? What's going to happen to them when they have to go to another neighborhood, another place, a different relationship? How are they going to get through? By helping people build their resiliency, you encourage them to take on challenges, and you help them grow through their pain as well. Which brings me to the other issue about the emotionality of it. If you're going to build someone's resilience, do you limit their emotionality? That's a real question. So if somebody is showing too much sadness, too much depression, I think you have to look at a continuum. If a person is too manic or too depressed, you want to harness them. You want to pull them in a little bit. But a natural course of sadness, crying, you know, or anything, any natural within normal range is perfectly fine. Grieving is fine. People who do not grieve very often do not have the resiliency of people who are able to go through it. So allowing someone to feel what they feel without canceling it, without taking it away, without explaining to them or advising to them is usually very helpful. Because there's a pain when you lose something. And when you lose something and you go through the pain, you recover from it. People who don't go through the pain but they try to avoid it, they keep it lingering somewhere in the back of their minds. But it's difficult, because what's difficult is for you to see someone you love in pain is painful to you as well. And I think part of what helps you is to realize that if you let them go through it, it's a loving act. You help them grow. So all you need to do is keep a hand on their shoulder. Don't rub, don't stimulate, don't take them too far. Just keep a hand with people who are going through their pains. If they ask for help, give the help. If they don't ask for it, don't necessarily take care of everything for them, because you want to help them get themselves to a point where they are stronger. This is part of what we learned about this, and this is part of what we're seeing. You know, keep in mind, people of the Depression, children of the Depression came through with a higher level of resiliency in the 40s, because those are people who in the 40s, that were during the wartime people, the wartime soldiers were very, very resilient, but they were families. They were the children of parents of the Depression. The same thing with farm survivors, people who have been through droughts, like the children of American farmers with the Iowa countries that had farm crisis in the 80s and 90s. Their children grew up to be much more resilient than the average folk. There's so much more we could say about it, and we will in future programs. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. I want to hear your comments and your feedback, either on Facebook, but I would prefer send me an email, thepositivemind.com, armand@thepositivemind.com, and go to our website and comment there as well. I'm going to leave you with some music by Lenny Tristano, very beautiful, to soothe your day.